Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer.
Yes! Paul touch it up!
Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Today, we will be recapping the Rockets' 139-109 sound thumping of the Minnesota Timberwolves. This was a good bounce back win for this ball club. Look, you had the loss against the Thunder, didn't feel great, you know. Obviously, that game had a lot of built-up emotions around it. Russell Westbrook's return to OKC, all this stuff. And you went out there and everybody other than Russell Westbrook laid an absolute goose egg. It was a disappointing game. So it was nice that they were able to regroup, especially on a Saturday afternoon game, you know, 4 p.m. tip-off. It's kind of a weird time. You don't even really have a full 2 days. It's more like a day and a half removed from the Oklahoma City game, which was already a later tip-off at 8:30. So there was cause for concern, maybe a little bit going into this game, that the team might still be a little bit jet lagged from that last loss, so to speak, or, you know, that they might have come into this game and not played with the energy that they needed to. And that did happen, sort of. They kind of opened the game a little lackadaisical, just finished the first quarter 22-20 off of that Westbrook three-pointer to wrap things up. But after that, that's when the floodgates just absolutely opened up and they just torched the Timberwolves. Basically during that Russ-only lineup at the top of the second quarter and then James Harden coming back into the game without his headband, I will add. So he wore the headband. He was still rocking the headband, cornrow James Harden look for the first quarter, and then decided to ditch the headband when he came back in at his usual 7-8 minute mark in the second quarter, and he was playing like a completely different NBA player. He was playing like the James Harden we all know and love. He had a really solid game, 32 points, 12 rebounds, there it is, 12 rebounds, 8 assists, a couple steals. The only bad part about James Harden's game was 11 turnovers. It's like he was trying to get a quadruple-double, and he succeeded. So good on James, he had 11 turnovers. He was being really careless with the basketball, and that's really my only gripe from this game as far as the actual basketball being played on the court. My other gripe, regrettably, PJ Tucker was hurt during this game. Now, before I get further into it, it's not bad. Rockets PR has basically said that it's just classified as like a shoulder stinger and that he will most certainly be available. Well, should be available. I'm not going to say most certainly. I'm not putting words in their mouth. But he should be available for Tuesday's game at Memphis. So that shouldn't be an issue there for PJ Tucker. He's a trooper. He's built like a tank. Hasn't missed an NBA game in like 6 seasons or something to that nature. So he is definitely not one to, I guess, back down from an injury is what I want to say. Or if there is an injury, then it's got to be something significant to keep him out of a game. At least the way that it did in this one. He played the first couple minutes, got caught on a really hard screen. I forget by which player it was on the Wolves, but got hit by a really hard screen, messed up his shoulder. He was down on the court for a while. It was very concerning right out of the gate to start the game. PJ Tucker, you're one of your two main Iron Men, him and James Harden, and he hits the deck. You know, Toyota Center was very quiet for a prolonged period there. But PJ gets up, he walks off the court, a little shaken up, crowd cheers him on, and that was that. And there might have been some concern as to how the rotation would look now that you're down PJ Tucker and you were down Clint Capella, who was also not available for this game, sitting out because of the heel injury that he's been struggling with on and off. And in his place, you actually had Isaiah Hartenstein. I was impressed, because after D'Antoni seemingly banished Hartenstein to the Shadow Realm and decided that he wasn't allowed to play anymore, first against the Hawks and then against the Thunder, except for garbage time, I was surprised that he got the starting nod over Tyson Chandler. I would have expected Tyson to start the game, play his usual 3 to 4 minutes at the top of the first and third quarters, and then have to rely on Hartenstein and PJ Tucker in the Tuck Wagon lineup to shore up the rest of the minutes at the five spot. But they didn't do that. They actually gave Hartenstein some legitimate minutes, played 27 minutes, had 17 points, 15 rebounds, he had an assist, he had a couple steals, had 5 blocks. Sir Swatenstein, he was in full effect. And I think that we've seen it too many times now for it to just be a fluke that Isaiah Hartenstein deserves consistent minutes. He absolutely does. The way that he out-hustles the other 9 guys on the court consistently, the motor with which he plays with, when he was younger, when he was more raw, when he was not quite as polished as he is now, there was definitely, you saw the motor there, but the motor at times led him to, he was playing with so much energy and so much hustle that he constantly would find himself on the floor. I think that in every Isaiah Hartenstein appearance that we'd seen of him in seasons prior, he basically would spend, I don't know, every other possession on the ground, on the hardwood, because he would, you know, didn't really have control of his body. I don't know what it was. But you're seeing this motor now be a tool for the Rockets to use. And I'm going to compare him to somebody, and I don't want to get, you know, called out for this comparison. I don't think it's that wild when you think about it, but he reminds me a little bit about Montrezl Harrell. Just the guy who can come off the bench and he's playing with such a high energy level. Now, he's not quite the, you know, the flashy dunker that Montrezl is, and he is a legitimate center as opposed to being an undersized center, but I see some of the similar qualities there. And I think it's basically to the point where D'Antoni has no reason to not give Isaiah Hartenstein at least 10 to 12 minutes a night as Clint Capella's backup. The Rockets should have no reason to ever really go the small ball lineup, the Tuck Wagon lineup, unless the goal is to either match the opposing team's small lineup, or I guess if you're really looking to pick up the pace and, you know, run a 5-out set, then sure, go Tuck Wagon lineup. But I think that Isaiah Hartenstein gives you too many benefits, and it's the sample size keeps growing. As he gets minutes, he produces. 17 and 15 is not insignificant. He also had his first really breakout performance of the season earlier this year against the same Timberwolves squad. Now, the Timberwolves didn't have Karl-Anthony Towns, so there's that. So it's not like he was going up against Towns in this game. He was getting to be guarded and guard the likes of Gorgui Dieng, so that's not, you know, phenomenal. But the numbers don't lie. And we don't even need Hartenstein to put up a double-double every night. We just need consistent minutes out of a big behind Clint Capella so that the Rockets don't lose any semblance of size on the court. Because when they go small, it feels like their defense struggles. It feels like the team overall struggles. So I was impressed with his play in this game. I think that when he does get his minutes, he's making the most of it. 8 of 9 shooting from Hartenstein. Only missed one basket, missed a free throw. That was it. He was great. He was phenomenal. 5 offensive rebounds out of his 15 total boards. 10 were on the defensive end, 5 offensive rebounds. And I remember one specific possession where he out-hustled 3 or 4 different T-Wolves, fought, got the ball back, got the offensive board, kicked it out to Westbrook. Westbrook then took it from the three-point line, acted like he was driving it in, and Benny Mack and threes dipped from the three-point line, ran baseline, jumped up, and got an alley-oop pass and slammed it home from Westbrook. That was beautiful to watch. And that all started with Isaiah Hartenstein and his just desire to get that offensive rebound. He wanted that board more than the Timberwolves did. And having that type of energy and effort on the court is contagious. which is why I'd love to see him get more consistent minutes. Give him 10 to 14 minutes a night. That's it. More than that, sure, if you want to, but at least 10 to 14, somewhere in there, just to spell Clint Capela. I think he deserves that, and I think a lot of you guys think that too. So we'll keep talking about the Rockets-T-Wolves game, 139-109 victory. We'll get more on that in just a second, but first, a quick word from our friends over at Echelon Fitness. Getting fit is tough, but to get fit in 2020, you don't have to join a gym or pay a ton for overpriced fitness equipment. The best way to get in the best shape of your life is with Echelon. Go to echelonfit.com to discover their EX1 connected fitness bikes that offer a high-quality at-home cycling experience at less than half the price of a Peloton. Echelon makes beautifully engineered products for everyone, busy moms and dads, first responders, athletes, whatever your activity level is, they make a bike for you. And with daily live and on-demand studio classes right in your home, you'll never have to step foot in a gym. You'll love Echelon, but if you aren't 100% satisfied, they'll give you your money back. Join hundreds of thousands of men and women who are getting fit with Echelon. Don't pay a ton for a Peloton. Buy an Echelon bike today for under $1,000. Just go to echelonfit.com/LOMBA to learn about their limited time free Apple iPad and complete details of this exclusive offer. That's echelonfit.com/LOMBA. echelonfit.com/LOMBA. Echelon, it's your time. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, talking about the Houston Rockets 139-109 win over the Minnesota Timberwolves, improving the Rockets to 26-12 on the season, dropping the T-Wolves to 15-23. T-Wolves are just not in the playoff picture this year, not their year. They've got a lot going on over there. They've got a young team, but they've got some serious questions that they are faced with as far as the pairing of Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. Now, I know Kat wasn't in this game, but that team has some serious questions that they've got to face regarding their future as an organization. But back to our beloved Rockets. I didn't mention it in segment one, but Ben McLemore actually gets the starting nod over Daniel House Jr. in this game. And I was a bit taken aback by this. I wasn't opposed to it. Now, I wasn't exactly calling for D House's head or anything. I wasn't thinking that, you know, he needed to be benched, but he has struggled as of late. The four games preceding this one. So basically, I'm counting, even though it was New Year's Eve, I'm counting the Denver Nuggets game as the maybe first game of the new year because it was played on New Year's Eve. So I like to think that the Rockets have played five games so far in 2020 or around and concerning the new year. And in those previous four games, so not including the Minnesota game, Daniel House was just averaging 4.5 points, shooting 27% from behind the arc, just a hair under 32% overall, playing about 31 minutes a game. Not a great stat line for Daniel House Jr. And on top of that, his defense has had a bit of a drop off as well. And I think that it doesn't get talked about enough, but I think the ability for a player who relies on a certain part of their game, whether it's a specific thing they do on defense or a specific way that they play on offense, I think that it's important for players to then not let their struggles on one side of the basketball bog down their play on the other side of the basketball. And I think that it's becoming evident that Daniel House Jr.'s offensive struggles to start the new year in recent games, and just really over his last stretch of like 10 or so games, isn't much better. I remember pulling the numbers for both PJ Tucker and Daniel House Jr. a few episodes ago, and they didn't look great. So roughly the last 10 to 15 games for Daniel House Jr. have not been ideal in the slightest. So that being said, I think that his offensive struggles have maybe impacted his ability or his desire or his engagement level on defense, because we were legitimately talking about him being the second best defender on the team to start the year alongside PJ Tucker. I was blown away by Daniel House's defensive commitment to start the season, as well as his seemingly improved three-point shot where he was consistently shooting over 40% to start the year. And then he regressed a little bit. So as of right now, his shooting percentage is floating around, let's see, 37.9. So still a really respectable percentage. But you have to remember, it's dropping, and it's consistently dropping because he was shooting so well earlier this season. So again, the last four games, he's shooting 27%. So he built himself a bit of a cushion to start the season, but his three-point percentage has definitely dropped off compared to what it once was. Now, he's still the second-best three-point shooter on the team. James Harden leads at 38%, P.J. Tucker at 37.3%. Then Ben McLemore, Benny Mac in threes, his replacement, 36.5% on the season. And it actually doesn't have much to do with this game per se, because PJ Tucker only played 2 minutes. But I was interested to see what lineups had played, I guess, the most for the Rockets. And obviously their starting lineup, Westbrook, Harden, House, Tucker, Capella. That's the lineup that's played the most minutes together for this ball club. And that lineup has a pretty respectable net rating. So that lineup, our traditional starting lineup, they've got 346 minutes played together. They have an offensive rating of 109.5, a defensive rating of 100.1, for a net rating of 9.3. But I was interested, because in place of Daniel House, Ben McLemore has started a few games for this ball club, and he has produced well. He's been a plus-minus monster, seconded only by Isaiah Hartenstein, who is apparently the plus-minus GOAT, had a team-high plus of 39 against the Timberwolves, which is just insane to think about. But Ben McLemore in the starting lineup alongside the regular starters minus Daniel House, so you've got Westbrook, Harden, McLemore, Tucker, and Capella, that lineup is the second most played lineup, five-man lineup, for the Houston Rockets. They've played in a total of 18 games together. Just 104 minutes, so not a huge sample size, but it's the second biggest five-man rotation that they've used so far this season. That lineup has a defensive rating of 85.7 and an offensive rating of 105.5 for a net rating of 19.9. That's the best five-man net rating that this Rockets team has. I just found that interesting. I'm not advocating for the benching of Daniel House Jr. I don't think that's it. However, I think that Ben McLemore and Eric Gordon, and I think that their abilities to, let's face it, just pull the trigger quickly. I think that a lot of the Rockets are hesitant shooters, and I think that in this system under Mike D'Antoni, the way that they play, focusing so much on having James Harden and Russell Westbrook create shots for the rest of the team, with an emphasis on them being three-pointers, you can't have hesitant shooters. And it bothers me so much that guys like Daniel House and P.J. Tucker, who are good shooters, seemingly won't shoot sometimes. P.J. Tucker is the most frustrating because he is arguably a lights-out shooter, especially from the corners. It's P.J.'s corner, right? That's the little blurb that pops up on the Toyota Center Jumbotron, P.J.'s corner, whenever he hits a three. And yet sometimes he just refuses to shoot, especially when he's not in the corners. And that bothers me the most, when he's like out there at the top of the key or something and there's an opposing five guarding him in the tuck wagon lineup, like a legitimate five, like a 7-footer. And his defender will sometimes be hedged off him all the way down to the free throw line, leaving PJ wide open. And PJ isn't looking to shoot sometimes. He's just worried about getting the dribble handoff to James or to Russ or running whatever play they're trying to run. At that point, dude, just take the three. Like, if you're that wide open, if they're not going to respect you out of the three-point line just because it's not the corner, you've got to make a defense pay for that. So that bugs me a little bit from PJ. I'm not going to harp on him too much because he did get injured, so I guess we'll cut him some slack there. But Daniel House Jr. as well, sometimes I feel like he hesitates and, he's got a bit of a slower release. He picked up his release speed compared to last season. Last season, it was really bad. This year, he's definitely got a bit of a quicker release, but it's still not a fast release. It's not to the likes of Eric Gordon or Ben McLemore, who Ben elevates quite a bit when he shoots, which is nice. It's very Gerald Green-esque, which is kind of fitting, I guess, that he's filling that Gerald Green role for this ball club, because He elevates. He shoots quickly. He's not afraid to shoot. He'll get shots up in a hurry. It's wonderful. Eric Gordon is the same way, although Eric doesn't necessarily elevate when he shoots. Shoots more of a set shot almost. But Eric can also shoot from 4, 5, 6 steps behind the three-point line sometimes, which is huge because that actually stretches the defense even further past the traditional three-point line distance. So I just think that Westbrook and Harden alongside those guys, and it shows in the numbers right here. Now, Eric Gordon hasn't played enough this season to really have made an impact anywhere in the lineups trackers yet, at least not the new and improved Eric Gordon with his shiny new knee. But Ben McLemore has. And that lineup, again, I'm not advocating for Ben McLemore to take over the starting role. I think Daniel House should be the starter in that spot. It's just interesting that this lineup has played so well together. And it may be, you know, if I'm looking at these numbers, then that means Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey have definitely looked at these numbers. So hopefully we'll see more of that lineup and those specific five guys on the court together, because obviously they're producing and they're producing at a high level. So I've got a few more points to hit on regarding this game. We'll get to that in the final segment here at Locked On Rockets, so do not go anywhere. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, talking about the Rockets' 139-109 win over the Minnesota Timberwolves, improving the team to 26-12 now on the season. A few more stat lines for some of your Houston Rockets that didn't quite get yet to mention. Russell Westbrook had 30 points, 6 boards, 10 assists, had a couple steals, had some really flashy passes. I think probably about 4 passes that turned directly into dunks. I know there was 1 to Isaiah Hartenstein, 2 to Ben McLemore maybe. I know there was the 1 to Ben McLemore, absolutely. And it definitely felt like Russell Westbrook and Ben McLemore had a good connection going on this evening. There were a couple baseline cuts that looked really good. One for the alley-oop, which I talked about earlier. Then there was one where he just cut backdoor and was able to lay the ball in. Another one where Westbrook was caught down deep inside the paint with nowhere to go, had 3 or 4 Timberwolves defenders around him, and he was able to kick the ball out for Ben McLemore's only three-pointer of the evening. He was 1 of 3 from behind the arc. Benny McIntyre's had 13 points, had a few boards, had a few assists, had a block in there somewhere. The team as a whole, 6 blocks, 5 on Isaiah Hartenstein, 1 from notorious shot blocker Ben McLemore, apparently. And then Eric Gordon off the bench. Gordon had 17 points, 5 of 13 shooting from downtown, 6 of 17 overall. So not a great shooting night by Eric Gordon's usual standards. He had a few boards, had an assist, a couple turnovers. So not a great game from Eric Gordon. Not a bad game either, though. The 5 of 13 is, we'll take 5 of 13, especially from him. And I'm happy to have another shooter back who isn't afraid to shoot the ball. And I mentioned it a bit in segment 2, talking about the hesitancy of some of the Rockets shooters. But Eric Gordon is a guy that has zero conscience. He will go out there and he'll shoot a shot, and he's like a goldfish. He's just immediately, as soon as the ball has left his fingertips, he doesn't know or doesn't remember whether it went in or didn't go in, and he's just ready to keep shooting. So love those types of players in this offense. That's what keeps this offense humming along smoothly, is having guys like that. Now, occasionally those guys may or may not shoot you out of a game, but Eric also can mix in some driving, and he'll take the ball inside a little bit, and using his size and his strength, is able to finish right there at the rim. So he gives the Rockets another dynamic scorer alongside Russell Westbrook and James Harden, who can create his own shot, maybe create for others just a little bit, and just happy to have him back and healthy again with that shiny new knee of his. Now, credit to Mike D'Antoni. Soon as PJ Tucker got hurt, I thought we were going to be looking down the barrel of a 6 or 7 man lineup, honestly. I wasn't quite sure who was going to get burned by the heavy minutes, but he didn't do that this game. The high minute man for the Rockets was Russell Westbrook with 33 minutes. Arguably, you could have pulled Westbrook out a bit earlier in the fourth quarter than you did, but I'm not going to have any gripes there. Team was having fun. They were playing good basketball. Let Westbrook do him. Let him get some burn. He still got to rest for a majority of the fourth quarter. All good there. Daniel House Jr. had 31 minutes. Everybody else played less than 30 minutes, which was phenomenal. Kudos to Mike D'Antoni for actually going to Tabo Cephalosha and Tyson Chandler after the PJ Tucker injury occurred. Now, it's not like I don't want to see these guys in the regular rotation. No, that's not where I'm going with this. But I'm happy that he branched out the rotation and kind of spread the minutes around, especially in a blowout like this game. Clemens, Michael Frazier both got some burn there at the very end. They both got 8 minutes in the fourth quarter. They both missed both of their three-point attempts, so 0 for 4 from behind the arc for both of them. So not making the most of their minutes in garbage time, unfortunately. Although Clemens is usually pretty good at that. Frazier's still breaking into his NBA. It's not his NBA debut, but he's only played a couple games now. So not gonna harp on Frazier too much. But when it's garbage time, you got to take advantage, man. If you want real minutes, do it. Anyways, I'm just impressed that Mike D'Antoni actually found a way to incorporate the other two guys, to not have them on the court too much at the same time. Again, only 15 minutes apiece for Chandler and Cephalosha, but it really just makes you think that if you had PJ in this game, what the lineup would have looked like. Would D'Antoni still, was his plan to still kind of spread the minutes around? Because you've got a really solid 9-man rotation. You've got your starters, and then off the bench, you have either McLemore or House, whoever's not starting, Eric Gordon, Austin Rivers, and Isaiah Hartenstein. That 9-man rotation should be your 9-man rotation every night, no exceptions, which is why I was upset when Mike D'Antoni opted to not use Isaiah Hartenstein in the Atlanta Hawks game. James Harden played a team-high 40 minutes in that game. And then same thing, OKC game, no Isaiah Hartenstein until garbage time, no Chris Clemens, even though he's a guy who can maybe check in and give you a little bit of a boost off the bench if nobody else is hitting shots, especially in the absence of Eric Gordon during that OKC game. But overall, this game, MDA, spread the minutes around, great coaching, great handling of his squad, keeping them fresh. And that's the good thing, is if the team takes care of business, if the team comes out and does what they're supposed to do, which everybody did for the most part, except for James Harden with his turnovers and PJ Tucker, the audacity of PJ Tucker, how dare he get injured in this game? He's not doing his job properly. I kid. But everybody came out and did their jobs this game, and they took care of business. They blew out a team that they were supposed to blow out, and the starters got some rest, and that's how it should be. That's how you're supposed to handle under 500 teams. And it's regrettable that they don't often do this or give themselves a chance to rest when you've got other teams like the Milwaukee Bucks, like Giannis, who gets to rest seemingly every other fourth quarter. Seems like every other game he's just sitting for the entire fourth quarter, which is insane. You've got James Harden, who is in probably still in the top five of minutes played across the entire league, maybe even top three. I think he was the second highest minutes played per game person for a while there. And then Giannis isn't even in the top 50. So that just kind of goes to show you the weaker competition that he's facing in the Eastern Conference and the luxury that Bucks team has of at least, they take care of business early and then he doesn't have to play the fourth quarter. He's on that Steph Curry load management plan from the 73-9 season where he's still dropping 30 points a game and not playing the fourth quarter. Kind of nice. And that's the Bucks team. That's their schedule. And even some Bucks fans are upset about it. You go online and look on, you know, on online forums, on Reddit or anywhere else, and Bucks fans are upset about the fact that Coach B refuses to play their guys more minutes, like in close games or specifically last year's playoffs, that he spread the minutes around too much. So as much as we like to gripe here at Locked On Rockets and on Twitter and everywhere about MDA using short rotations, the opposite can also be true. There's also times where you spread the minutes around a little bit too much or you're a little bit too trusting of some of the end of the bench guys and you're wondering why your star player isn't playing 40 plus minutes in a must-win game. So there's definitely coaches out there like Coach B who have gone the opposite direction as Mike D'Antoni and spread the minutes around a little bit too much. So maybe we count our blessings with MDA. We say, all right, you know, he's going to play the guys that he's going to play. And thankfully, to the greatness of James Harden and Russell Westbrook and the system that is currently in place, they're probably more often than not going to come out on top. And speaking of coming out on top, luckily the Denver Nuggets actually came out on top of the LA Clippers last night, so Sunday evening. So right now, as far as the Western Conference playoff picture, you've got the Lakers are now sitting in the one seed, Nuggets in the two seed. The Utah Jazz have come out of nowhere and are sitting in the three seed at 27-12. They've won 9 games in a row, and it looks like they're really starting to figure things out as a team. Rockets are at 26-12, comfortably holding the fourth seed. And they're actually tied up with the Clippers, but because they hold the head-to-head tiebreaker 2-1 currently, they hold the fourth seed, so you got Clippers in the 5 spot. And then the Mavericks are starting to slip a little bit. They are 2.5 games back of the Clippers in the 6th spot. Then you've got the Thunder, 2 games back of the Mavericks in the 7th spot. And the Grizzlies, the freaking Memphis Grizzlies. Ja Morant, the Grizzlies, impressive. Just, I'm proud of that ball club. I'm proud of that team. It's a young team that has no business being in the playoff picture, and yet they are doing it. So, and this is the team that the Rockets play next. So you cannot take the Memphis Grizzlies lightly. Yeah, they're 18-22. But they're in the playoff picture, and they're playing pretty solid basketball. So you've got to give them some credit. They're riding a 5-game win streak as you're rolling into this game. It'll be Tuesday evening that the Rockets play the Grizzlies. So we'll talk one more time before that game. But you got to give the Memphis Grizzlies some respect. They're in the 8th spot in a really tough Western Conference, beating out teams like the Spurs, like the Suns, who started the year hot, the Trailblazers, who God knows what that organization is doing, the Kings, who were in the playoff picture last year. So it'll be interesting. That final 6, 7, and 8 spots in the Western Conference are definitely interesting. But the Rockets currently sitting in the 4th seed, and as long as they continue to take care of business, I still think that they're capable of at least locking down the 2 seed. I kind of see the Nuggets falling off at some point. I don't know why. It's just, I don't even have any numbers to back it up. I really don't. Just call it a gut feeling. But I could totally see the Nuggets kind of falling off and seeing the Rockets catching up and holding that 2 spot for the remainder of the season a little bit further down the line. We're almost to the halfway point in the season. We've played 38 games so far. Halfway point's 41, so almost there. In fact, the LA Lakers game that I've been hyping up for a while now, Rockets and Lakers, Saturday, January 18th, here in Houston, that game is actually game number 41 of the season, so it'll be a great benchmark at the exact halfway point of the season, a great test to see how this Rockets club is doing. Very excited for that game coming forward, or moving forward. So I think that's where we will wrap things up for today. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website LockedOnRockets.com, and the email address LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you guys to reach out to me and let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcast, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes that go straight to your inbox before they publish to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. For this Monday morning, January 13th episode, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon, right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.